Eric.
Hey, Charles.
How you doing, man?
I'm great.
Hey, so we're back at it with checking in.
Yes.
Right on.
Probably summer in Seattle.
Yes. Well, what did we get? One couple weeks this year?
Yes. And today it was actually gray out, but we made it. We made it to Building 42.
We did. Building 42.
And we're talking to David Marchin, or maybe you can pronounce your name as it should sound.
No, it's actually pretty good this time around. It's Marcin Dobosz.
So where are you from originally?
I'm from Poland.
Ah, from Poland, so good.
Yeah, kind of far away.
And so, how long have you been at Microsoft?
It was 4 years, just last week, actually.
Nice. Yeah. And did we recruit you from Poland directly, or did
No,
you...
I went to a school in the U.S.
So which school did you go to?
Duke University.
And did you do computer science there?
I did, in the end, do computer science. I started off with econ. It was a popular one amongst a lot of people there. But then I picked up computer science and realized I enjoyed that more than, supply and demand curves. So that was a sign that, I should switch.
Well, but maybe these days, it's like, maybe we need guys like you to fix the economy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And... So before that, so let's talk a little bit about your, the young Marcin when you were like a kid. How did you play with computers when you were like in high school or maybe in kindergarten?
Yeah, I did play with computers every now and then. The earliest I remember, it was a neighbor's Commodore 64.
That's the computer of choice of many people.
With the cassette tapes and, slowly loading things. But, that was mostly just for playing games, kind of a toy aspect of it. And then, graduated up to a 386 of my own and then picked up some programming in high school, did some Java, kind of messed around with HTML3 and, rudimentary JavaScript. Stuff like that.
And
C++.
And your first language was it BASIC on the Commodore 64, or did you only do games?
I only did games at that point. It was mostly for fun. I did somewhere around the house for some reason we had a few issues of those magazines they had back in the day where they would actually print out the source code of the program. And now that I think about it, it probably was BASIC, and I think I might have tried, typing one of those in, but I don't even remember what happened with it, if it worked or not.
Yeah, usually the
usually you made a typo somewhere, and after 500 lines of typing, you're like, oh, it's not worth trying to find it.
So, and when you were in college, what was your favorite course?
Probably the kind of application design, application, what was the title of it? Wow, I forgot. I've forgotten at this point. But yeah, basically just writing programs and then designing those and, how do you build something out of smaller components and then, get them working together using all the, dry and utter patterns, stuff like that. So the kind of architecture-ish rather than algorithmic aspect of programming.
And what are you working on now?
Right now I'm working on, MVC4 on the ASP.NET side. The runtime and a bunch of other related and not so related things. Done some work for also the next version of .NET on the web forms and core runtime side. So, yeah.
So, and can you tell us a little bit, because you said MVC4, so that's where already kind of, like many versions had, where in my kind of memory this is still like, something super fresh. So can you kind of give us a little bit of kind of your history of that?
So I
and where kind of it comes from and
the MVC project.
So, yes.
I only joined the MVC feature team with version 3. So it was other people for versions 1 and 2. But basically the idea was to build a new programming model on top of the ASP.NET core runtime that's different than the existing kind of web forms metaphor, and that would appeal to people to kind of want to have more control over the HTML that's being emitted and then kind of get closer to the metal, if you will, of the output. And so,
like, but I mean, how can people get more control of HTML? ASP.NET, isn't that HTML with, you know, and fragments of code embedded in it?
So ASP.NET came out of ASP, and so it didn't come out of it. It was based on the .NET runtime, but it maintained parts of the model of ASP, but also combining it with this WinForms-like abstraction called WebForms, right? So people could either kind of write what was called kind of spaghetti code HTML mixed up with control statements and things like that, or they could use the declarative markup with controls like data sources and grid views and whatever. And for some people, that kind of became, it just wasn't appropriate for projects that needed the testability and things like that. The spaghetti markup, well, that's always kind of been nasty. And the control-based model, while it lets you get stuff done quickly and developing, you know, pages, it doesn't let you, we've kind of made it better over the years, but initially didn't really let you customize things the way you wanted it to. So with MVC, you kind of have more separation of concerns where we follow the model view controller pattern. You know, your logic is in one place, your presentation is in another place. And so while it could devolve into spaghetti code, it hopefully doesn't if you're doing it right. Yeah, and people so far seem to like it, so that's good.
And so what is, and of course, you know, as far as you can talk about it, so what is new in version 4?
A bunch of things. We just published our roadmap a few weeks ago on Phil Hack's blog, and as well as, I think, the Codeplex site for ASP.NET. Some runtime-related features for mobile, writing mobile websites. We're making it that easier to kind of replace mobile views for regular desktop views. So you can, you know, it looks good on your mobile device of choice. There's some also developer productivity features we're planning for basically allowing you to write what we call recipes, which is a framework for kind of gestures in VS that you can use to build out your project, add bits and pieces to it. It's kind of abstracting what so far has been like the add controller, add view dialogues, and kind of building a framework around that so that you can write your own versions of add controller or add view or add whatever, add, I don't know, authentication, add Ajax, add this and that. So we're making that pluggable and so that people can write their own. We can write new ones. Bunch of other stuff, kind of. But to be honest, MVC has become quite a mature project, even though you said that, you know, it's still kind of fresh. Well, it's 3.5 years old now.
Many products only have, like, you know, it takes 3 years to get one version out, and you're already at 4 versions in 3.5 years. That's
definitely.
Yes, sounds.
Well, it's the Scott Guthrie thing effect, right?
Wasn't he
involved in this project?
Legend says that he wrote it all on a napkin on the flight, and, you know, we just scanned it in, and that was version 1.0.
I like that legend. What was he drinking?
I don't know.
Okay. All right.
But, But, well, I mean, it's obviously a bit more complicated than that, and a bit more work went into it.
Of course.
A few more people than just himself. But, yeah, I mean, the MVC is kind of part of the trend on our team, trying to get code out there quicker, not necessarily tying ourselves to the Visual Studio train, which kind of happens less frequently than we would like. You know, historically, it's been every, 3 years or so. A lot can happen in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you design the framework, you ship it, and by the time it goes through all the testing and distribution or whatever, you're kind of, there's new things that happen, then you need to address those. So going on a more frequent, yearly or maybe even more frequent release cycle lets us react.
Mm-hmm.
Faster to industry trends. And
and how do you kind of gather requirements for features that you add? Do you have like a closed loop with your users, or how does that work?
Yeah, we a bunch of inputs. We kind of try to guess what people will want. That sometimes works out, sometimes doesn't. But we publish the roadmap. Get feedback from that. We have a bunch of different forum venues, maybe too much even. Now there's the ASP.NET website forums. Stack Overflow these days is a big part of it. Microsoft Connect, User Voice, a bunch of inputs that we take into account. And have our PM kind of tally it all up. And
cool. And so let's drill down a little bit in what, how you work. So what kind of tools do you use to build ASP.NET MVC? Are you using regular Visual Studio, or what kind of source control do you use? What process do you guys follow?
So for the tool side, we use Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate Edition. Source control is a Team Foundation server, I guess just because developer division kind of hosts that for us. So we get all the backup and stuff like that. We don't have to worry about it. Other than that, a bunch of other tools just to, Wix for compiling,
mm-hmm.
Creating the installers and stuff. But pretty much most of it is just plain vanilla tools, some MockU for unit testing and things like that. And the process that we follow, it's kind of a different people do it differently. It's kind of a mixture. We don't really have a well prescribed, everyone will follow this way of doing things. It's just kind of what makes sense, I guess. But it's worked so far pretty well, and everyone seems to be reasonable. We use some internal code review tools, and so we kind of give each other feedback and make sure that people aren't doing silly things in code, stuff like that.
And so do you use, I guess that you use C#?
Yeah.
Or are you using native code or VB or...
So we use C# since MVC is a managed library built on top of ASP.NET, which is itself managed for the most part. And then sprinkle in between that some JavaScript here and there for the client side, since we're targeting websites. JavaScript these days is becoming bigger and bigger, so we're doing that. Officially supporting jQuery and shipping it as part of our templates, and we're kind of adding more and more external open source frameworks as well, so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't try to do our own. If something that's popular already and respected and well known exists out there, so. With MVC3, we shipped jQuery, jQuery UI, Modernizer. These are some well-known frameworks out there.
That's cool. And so when you use C#, what is your favorite feature of C#? So, for example, do you use C# 4.0? Do you use the async features, or are you kind of sticking with C# 3.5, or C# 3? And
No, it's C# 4.0. So, not really using async that much in the runtime itself, just because the nature of the ASP.NET pipeline is kind of single threaded per request. But you know, people developing applications on top of MVC could use async, and we're going to be adding more support for the upcoming, async task keyword in the next version of C# for MVC 4. So if you're going to be targeting that, we'll have that. But yeah, day to day, just plain old C# 4. Try to. As far as my favorite features, I do like to use Link a lot, and kind of the functional aspects of C#, and trying to find how can you succinctly express some piece of code without writing a whole bunch of nested for loops, just chain a few methods, select here, where there, stuff like that. Yeah.
So one of the things that you see now in a lot of server-side frameworks is that people are like, it's all event-driven and asynchronous.
Right.
Is that something, is that something that you can do with MVC, and is that something that you guys are kind of looking at to make it easier to do, or?
We already had async support as far as, your controllers and action methods are concerned. In the earlier versions of MVC, it's just the language wasn't there. You had to write your begin method, your end method, kind of hook that all up. Now with the async keyword, it'll become easier. Event-driven, we got people investigating Node.js as well. I actually don't know that much about it just yet because I haven't had the time to check it out, but got some other people doing it.
And what is the feature that you're working on? And again, if you can talk about it.
Really, it's kind of all over the place between bug fixes. Some larger chunks that I checked in recently was... it was actually not into MVC directly, but to our open source package manager called Nuget. Support for pre-installing packages into project templates. And what that kind of gets us is that when we ship the MVC project templates, they will come with packages for all of those open source frameworks that we're using, like jQuery, Modernizer, etc. And since they're NuGet packages now, it basically means that when you're developing your website and a new version of jQuery comes out, NuGet will let you know, hey, there's a new version, upgrade me. And so that way we can kind of create templates that don't become obsolete too quickly. You can choose to deploy new versions of the libraries that you're using more easily. So that was one thing. That was an open source contribution, so that's kind of cool too that we get to do that every now and then.
So I must say I love NuGet. I mean, it's like I think this is fantastic. But one of the things that I notice is as there's more and more kind of packages available,
mm-hmm.
it's like now finding the ones that you need becomes it becomes like you have to do search now over this kind of giant bag of things. Do you guys have any ideas on? About that?
Should we reinvent search for packages? I don't know. I'm not the one kind of driving those tasks, so I don't have that much impact on that. But just as with anything else, there's so much information out there, and Bing is your friend in some ways. We're not trying to kind of police the the site or the list of packages. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if people, there are some people who just put out their random collection of functionality that, you know, they find useful and that they want to have access to quickly, but, you know, it maybe isn't even designed for as a library that anyone could just use. But, well, it's kind of their choice if they want to do that. We won't stop them from doing it. So, yeah, I mean, there's rating systems built in, you know, you can rate packages, and hopefully the popular, the useful ones will float to the top, and you know, the more obscure ones, well, you'll have to dig around a little bit for them. But I guess it's like with any sort of other project, you know, there's jQuery plugins out there, there's, you know, Ruby gems, all of those kind of have the issue of overwhelming information.
Yeah, I agree. It's not something particular to this. It's like a lot of, and even, you know, in the old-fashioned, good old-fashioned, when you right-click add reference, right? Now you go in the GEC and there's like, you know, there's even harder to find what you're looking for.
You know, there's, I think that's where the power of the internet, I guess, comes in. And, you know, we, for Scott Hanselman, for example, runs his Package of the Week series on his blog where he highlights the interesting ones. You know, just the other day I was looking at a blog post by Steve Sanderson about the packages that he used in building his Learn Knockout JS website. So, you know, people will share that information, and that knowledge will be built of what you want to use and whatnot. But, I mean, a lot of those packages, I mean, those projects already existed before NuGet came along. Mm-hmm. NuGet just makes it easier to install them. So, you know, you want jQuery, so it's easy to get it for a Visual Studio project or like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know the guys that are working on making the website itself, you know, better, more usable. It's still has the beta moniker and the logo, so hopefully it'll improve and that beta excuse will go away as well.
And do you think it will be interesting, or will it ever be the case that there will be some kind of, you know, package store where developers can kind of, you know earn a living when they
I've heard requests for, you know, that some people would want to do that. Some people do see dollar signs and they try to monetize that. I don't know. I can't honestly say. Maybe. You know, the system is extensible, so you could have other repositories of packages. You don't have to depend on the, you know, the official public feed. It's kind of whether... you know, there would probably be some work involved in kind of getting the authorization part into NuGet so that, you know, you can download the things that you pay for. But man, it's an open source project, so if someone out there feels that they want to have a feed that, you know, is paid for, free to contribute some code into the project to get the authorization components.
It'd have to be pretty amazing code, man. You know what I mean? Would you pay for code?
Well, I mean
you pay for. I'm asking. Would you pay for code?
Well, of course. Man? I mean, look. I think first of all, I think, like, you know, one of the things that we somehow lost is developers. The notion that developers have to eat. I mean, we have to, you know.
Of course.
We have to eat. We have to pay the rent. You know, we have to pay the mortgage. So I think it's a good thing if developers can make a living. And
agreed.
I think what you see with kind of the app stores. Is that that's, you know, a way where developers can make money, and you don't have to pay. That's the other thing, right? It's not that you're paying hundreds of dollars like in the olden days, but, you know, if you have a popular package and you can sell it for a few dollars, I think that's fantastic.
Okay.
You know, it'd be cool. I mean, it's kind of with the commoditization of, you know, packages out there, and the open source movement, you know, being around for years now, there's usually free alternatives to pretty much everything. It's just a question of, hey, do the paid ones provide enough value so that people still want to pay for it? That's
a good point.
Our team really isn't looking to sell software. If anything, we're kind of a cost, cost center for the company. Since we give all of our frameworks out there for free, MVC's free. You know, all the Ajax control toolkit is free. All that stuff. I've seen people want that. So
okay.
At some point in the future, yeah, why not?
And so the NuGet website, is that written itself using ASP.NET and MVC?
I haven't been involved with the website that much, but I know it's written in Orchard. It's actually a project. Orchard itself is an open source CMS system that's based on MVC, and then there's an application called. It's somewhere on CodePlex as well, the project gallery or something like that, which is, based on Orchard, and that's what powers the NuGet.org website. Kind of .NET all around.
So I have a question for you based on what you just said. What do you think of the movement towards JavaScript? In other words, coming from a very structured, object-oriented language like C#, when you think about going to JavaScript, what goes through your mind? Not that you're going to have to. I'm just asking.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've played around with JavaScript every now and then. I'm usually on the server side, so I don't have to use it that much. It's definitely cool. jQuery is very powerful. Writing websites, that's fun. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's something we'll have to wait and see how far that goes. Didn't you say just recently that jQuery is like, or JavaScript is like the assembly of?
Oh, recently I've been saying this for many years.
It came to my attention recently.
Yes.
Which is an interesting notion that. I mean, it's kind of it's provocative in the sense that JavaScript itself is such a powerful, high level language, and so the kind of saying that it's the assembly, I don't know if it does its justice, but I guess depending on how you define that term.
Well, here he is, man.
Yeah, it depends how you define. High level.
Yeah,
so, for example, I think, for me, JavaScript is very low level because, it doesn't have much declaration. So if you want to kind of, in C#, when you define a class, there that kind of hides a lot of complexity, for how to do the constructors and so on. In JavaScript, you have to write all these things using code. So there's it's like, where in C# there's a lot of declarations, in JavaScript there's a lot of statements. So in that sense, I think, JavaScript is an assembly language because there's a lot more encoding of the intent that you have to do by kind of, writing code. And so I don't think JavaScript is really a high-level language. I think it's a low-level language that has curly braces. But I think it's as an assembly language, it's kind of, super powerful, and that's what you see nowadays too. A lot like CoffeeScript, for example, that seems to kind of be taking off like crazy. ClojureScript, everybody is kind of targeting JavaScript, and then using the fact that there's so many JavaScript implementations and high quality JavaScript implementations.
From the sense that JavaScript is the kind of platform that you run applications on these days, web applications. The browser is the platform. It's a very appealing to have the kind of write once, run anywhere notion. We'll see. It's kind of but the fact that it's kind of so low level, as you say, makes the, at least in our world, the C# world kind of interesting. How do you translate between, the higher C# layer to the JavaScript layer? There's been Script Sharp around for a while, and it does provide some sort of, written C# code translated to JavaScript. but you know, it still tries to bolt on to things that weren't designed to interoperate necessarily as easily. It's only going to be interesting to see how, you know, JavaScript on the server with things like Node.js and all that stuff works out. Yeah, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's like every in the end, it's all just code. So yeah, I think people often make a big deal. You know, I think, you know, whether it's a high level declarative assembly language, it's all kind of, you know, in the end, you know, it's all kind of Turing power computing platform. It really doesn't matter. It's but yeah, I think for me the real thing is kind of the declarations. For example, like in C#, when you use a namespace, that's a declaration.
Mm-hmm.
And in JavaScript, it's a statement that executes code.
Right.
So those are kind of, you know, like little differences. But yeah, it's interesting how that JavaScript, because it's not new, right? A lot of people think that JavaScript is new, but it has been around for
the 90s,
you know,
right?
I think,
right.
You know, even before .NET, actually, so...
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
95, yes. Whatever,
yep.
So first Netscapes came around.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah. It took it a while to kind of take off, you know, so...
Interesting. Well, that was a good segue.
Yep.
So, you know, but he did mention the IL to JS implicitly. You know, Eric has written that before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's someday will hopefully.
Yeah, well, that really takes JavaScript as an assembly language, where you're just taking IL and you JIT it to JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's like, you know, using JavaScript as a universal runtime.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's interesting thinking about the portability of the language. You don't really talk about it that much.
Yeah, that is a good point, Charles. It's highly portable, right? It's like it runs on the server, on the client, even on Windows. You know, if you do put, you know, on Windows, if you put a .js file on your desktop, you know, it runs. It runs. So, yeah.
Same on Linux, Mac. I don't know about the Mac, but certainly in the context of the browser.
Yep.
Maybe JavaScript is the most portable language in the world.
Maybe.
My goodness. What's the world coming to, man? I don't believe that, because I know what it is. But anyway.
Yeah. But on the other hand, like, really, I think, you know, for a while it looked as if x86 was also kind of, you know, in some sense that's also like the universal runtime. And now we have ARM.
It's true.
So, yeah, I think, and I think it's good because, you know, if once you kind of, you know, I think you get the competition out there. So it's like when multiple people are, or multiple groups are kind of, you know, looking at that, that's where we get progress.
Yeah. Well, but on the other hand, you know, there's Java, for example, has been around for, you know, nearly as long as JavaScript or even longer. I guess my point is that, you know, there's always this kind of attempt to create the one runtime, one language to rule them all, and, you know, no disrespect to Java or anything, but it hasn't really achieved that goal. I mean, it does run in a lot of places, but, you know, there's a lot of places that it doesn't run on, like the, you know, the iOS platform and stuff like that. So I'm just curious, you know, what's going to be the next thing after JavaScript? You know, once maybe the JavaScript hype kind of subsides, and then, you know, people start finding something better. What's the next big thing? I have no idea, but it's interesting to consider.
Hmm. Yeah, but you know, I think this is like, you know, developers will always be kind of, you know, tweaking their tools. But I think we're in many respects we are very much like craftsmen, and if you look at craftsmen, well, they still use hammers, and
yes,
maybe they use, like, you know, really advanced tools, but they have like a whole toolbox of tools that they use, and I think it's exactly the same with programming. I mean, Charles talks a lot about native code, and you know, you can say JavaScript, but you still need native code. Like, where, how is JavaScript implemented? Well, that's implemented in
C++.
Native,
yeah,
in C++. So, So I think there will never be a single language that will be used for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think also that's kind of a foolish idea to kind of chase that.
Obviously.
It would be, the world would be much less fun.
Exactly.
If you know.
It's all about the cycles, you know. By the time you learn one technology well, the next big thing comes along, and then you kind of have to.
But here's the thing that I would ask, and you're a professional developer, which is why we're in your office talking to you. I mean, it seems to me that, and Eric has talked a lot about this, but languages really haven't progressed that much.
No.
Now, the IDEs have. Our debuggers, the experience, incredible. But the language as the tool, it seems like everything's still C-based when you come down to it, in the syntactic sense. Forgive, no offense to the DB developers out there. But do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, what if there was some really different way of thinking about stuff? I mean, if you look at closure, it's really ugly. I mean, you have to like...
Well, but talking about something that's old,
that's
Lisp.
Yeah.
And in some sense, JavaScript is Lisp as well, but instead of, you know, round brackets, it has curly braces. and really, I think you're right. Programming languages are fundamentally not that different. Because they are all about, you know, statements, modifying state, and some notion of abstraction, methods, and then, you know, make methods first class, you get closures and functions. And that's how we glue things together. So I think if you look at the commonalities, I think look much more similar than different.
Yeah.
This is true.
And the real strange languages like Prolog, where you really have a different computational model with backtracking and unification, they never really reached the kind of mainstream. I mean, there's like, you know, fans that really like them, but that remains a niche, very much a niche language.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's because all the other ones are so similar and therefore familiar, anything that kind of pushes outside of the box, you know. Well, a lot of people will reject because it's just a completely different way of thinking.
Yeah, but this is a good point. So when, like, one of the things I think that's a very strong point of imperative languages is the fact that it's the debuggability, the tools, and Charles also mentioned that, the fact that there's tooling. I mean, like, how much time do you spend in the debugger, you know, putting breakpoints, looking at stack traces, and so on? I think if you're really building large programs, you cannot live without those tools.
Yeah.
And once you get like more exotic computational models, debugging becomes much harder. You can already see it when you mentioned Link, when you have, like, you know, deferred execution.
Oh yeah.
Debugging gets, you know, like orders of magnitude harder. There's no notion of stack trace anymore. And when you now throw in concurrency, and so I think there's many good reasons why people stick to.
Well understood, well known, and it works reasonably well for the 90% case. So, why move to something different? Except, you know, change the style of the curly braces a little bit or whatnot.
And like, even MVC is like a really kind of old idea. So but it's the same, I think, with movies, right? There's like, well, is it seven different plots, you know, that all stories follow? Maybe computer science only has, you know, a handful of ideas that we keep recycling.
The fat client versus, you know, thin client and mainframe, you know, that's one of those other cycles that keeps, you know, going back and forth between stuff hosted in the mainframe or the cloud or wherever versus running it all locally on your thing, your machine. It's all just cycles and turtles all the way down.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's a great great ending.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. And
you're welcome.
You know, we're looking forward to the release of HP.NET MVC 4.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, you're welcome.
Keep checking in, man.
Cool. Yeah, we'll do.
See ya.
See ya.
Thank you, Eric.